Gary Garrison, KABC News.
This show furnished by Girardi Keys.
This is Champions of Justice, presented by Tom Girardi. This is Dave Dino, and this is the program that takes you behind the scenes with those who make the laws and those who protect your rights through the rule of law. Your hosts are Tom Girardi, Christopher Omey, and Robert Bocock. Tom Girardi is the founding partner of the law firm of Girardi & Keys, known for passionate litigation of corporate giants on behalf of aggrieved individuals. Chris Omey is with Girardi & Keys and specializes in the areas of product liability, toxic torts, premise liability, insurance bad faith, commercial torts, intellectual property, personal injury, and wrongful death. Robert Bocock is a licensed California Grade 5 water treatment operator and maintains various other water industry licenses. He routinely provides expert witness work to legal firms in the specific area of water resource management. They are champions of justice for the little guy. Each week we bring you this informative and entertaining hour, bringing clarity to the headline-generating legal challenges of the day. We're going to talk about a few of those legal headlines, because our guest is Scott Slater. Scott is a shareholder at Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, and Schreck. Scott's legal practice emphasizes negotiation and strategic planning for clients seeking to secure new water supplies and assisting them in meeting their objectives for reliability and sustainability. Scott serves as special water counsel to investor-owned utilities, private equity groups, private corporations, special districts, cities, and large landowners. Scott has nearly 30 years of experience representing clients in complex water matters, predominantly in the western United States. And water is a subject that is on everyone's minds these days. Tom?
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you. And also, we have with us today Bob Bocock, one of the finest water minds in the country, who spent all of his adult life, basically, concerned with water contamination, water use, etc. And so, Dave Dino, it's really nice to have these two very expert people with us to talk a little bit about the things that we understand is a real problem here. I was going to ask them to give us the exact date when the drought will be over and when we will solve all the problems of California with respect to water. And I also want to, you know, emphasize a little bit about water purity, its contamination, and things like that. So anyway, first of all, let's start with you, Scott. Tell us a little bit about what you do for a living.
Well, I had the great fortune of doing something I love, and for the last 30 years I've had a number of experiences in and around water supply development and allocation, and most of that time has been spent in the United States in practicing law, but I did along the way write a book called California Water Law and Policy, and I've taught law in the United States and in Western Australia and China. So I've had a great opportunity to see how water laws and policy are applied not only in the United States, but internationally.
Where'd you go to law school?
I went to law school at McGeorge in Sacramento.
And did you know you wanted the water stuff right from the beginning up there, or how did that happen?
You know, it's one of the great accidents in life. I had a girlfriend, or actually a wannabe girlfriend, when I was in college, and I happened to...
I take it you were the wannabe, and she
I was definitely the pursuer, and she would have no part of it. But I ended up getting a double major because I was chasing her around on geology matters, and time came for me to do an honors project, and I literally married the two subjects of political philosophy and geology with a honors project in groundwater hydrology. And that led me to have my thesis evaluated, and I ended up going to McGeorge and spent my college years at the U.S. Department of Justice working on a case on its way to the United States Supreme Court.
The only thing we know about water is what comes out of the tap. Why is it so interesting to you?
Well, if you've ever walked a ditch with a farmer and watch the expression in their face when inadequate water is in the ditch, it leaves an impression on you that you never forget. And I was raised in a family where my mother was a farmer. And I used to spend time with my grandfather here, actually, in Covina and Baldwin Park, California, before it urbanized. And so I understood the importance and value of water in that way, in a real, tangible, meaningful way.
Tell me this, Bob Bocock. What is your background and so forth with respect to water? So everybody knows now exactly everything about you two guys.
Well, as Scott points out, it's usually by accident. I had an incident while I was still in high school where I totaled the city manager's wife's car and had a deductible to pay off and started reading water meters on roller skates. that led me to the city yard there where I learned about the licensing program and went and got licensed, got hired on my 18th birthday by Metropolitan Water District, who had a tuition reimbursement program. They said if I'd come to work for them, they'd pay my tuition. So that's how I put myself through college. Worked at a number of suburban utility departments, where I met Scott Slater probably about 28 years ago. And we've worked together on legal matters literally from, I guess, as far north as we did the Seaside adjudication together in Monterey, all the way down to one pending right now in the Antelope Valley. So that's sort of my background in a nutshell. It's definitely an interesting field, and with the drought pending before us, it's something that's getting more interesting.
Scott, when's the drought over, okay? We want to... This is recorded so we can check up on this.
I'm afraid it's never ending. I'm afraid that the world we live in today is vastly different in terms of not only where and when precipitation shows up, but more importantly, the regulatory environment and the desire and the need to protect important species. And it is the overlay of regulatory restrictions, which are required under state and federal law, that is going to make water and water supply reliability really one of the big issues for the next couple of decades.
It goes way back. I mean, we have all seen stories, whether they're true or not, about how valuable a resource water is. In the Old West, there were literally water wars.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily unique to the United States. There are killings around the world over water more frequently than you would expect. And I think the United Nations has identified on multiple occasions that as they project forward into this century, that one of the leading potential causes of war is the insufficient sustainable water resources for nation states.
Chris?
I was reading today, actually, that... was it last year was the driest year on record in California?
There appears to be some debate as to whether or not is it in fact the driest year, but it is certainly the driest in recent times. And if you average the state's conditions or look at specific hot spots, I think you come away with the conclusion it's about as dry as it can get.
And, you know, we need some solutions, man. I think we need water to be able to live. I mean, that's the reason you got into this business, because of your family and so forth. I mean, is there a solution?
Well, I think there is no silver bullet, unfortunately. And it's going to take concerted effort on a number of fronts in order to stabilize the condition and try to move forward. So I think everybody is quick to point out that there are opportunities for conservation. But at the same time, it, in my opinion, we're not able to conserve our way out of the long-term shortage. And in fact, we will need to do something to move water from locations where it exists to where it's needed. And one of the identified ways to accomplish that result has really been through the establishment of markets and trading. And to do so, not in an unregulated way, but in a regulated environment and where water can go from those areas where it's short or find its way to where it's short from where it's long, and to allow people to participate. And there have been difficulties in implementing transfer policies, even though the legislature's been trying since at least the mid-70s to foster and facilitate transfers. For the most part, they occur locally and have not put the significant dent that we wanted into the shortage.
In California, transferring water from where to where?
Well, I think the most prolific transfer in the history of the United States is the San Diego IID transfer. It was enormous in terms of its total volume, and it's remarkable in that it wasn't intended or designed to displace any existing user. It was an investment of billions of dollars by the coast in rural farming in the Imperial Valley to cause increases in or improvements in their efficiencies, and then those savings were scalped, harvested, and then brought to the state. So there was a change of wealth from the coastal area to incentivize conservation by farmers, and then those savings were enjoyed by, again, the urban coast.
You know, I read some article, though, that El Nino is supposed to be here next year, and that's going to be bring tons of water and all that stuff.
Well, it's not just volume. It has to occur in the places and in the quantities at the times you need it. And it's more complex than just a gross precipitation number. And I don't think 1 year of rainfall is going to cure our problems. As I was indicating before, I think there's a widely held point of view now, which I think is correct, that our water supply problems are systemic. And we have infrastructure problems both in the San Francisco-San Joaquin Bay Delta. We have long-term projected shortages along the Colorado River. Even the city of Los Angeles's historic diversions away from the Owens Valley have been curtailed to all-time lows. And when you lay over on top of that the environmental conditions and pollution that exists in some of our groundwater basins, it becomes even more draconian in terms of its long-term effects.
And people are going to have to do their part, too, huh?
Everybody's going to need to do their part, and that pertains to individuals, to businesses, and to agriculture. There is no one group that is going to get away operating as they have in the past without change.
We're going to pause for just a moment as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Chris O'May and our special guests, Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. We're talking about the subject of water, and we have a lot more information for you. So keep it here at Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates, too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/mix for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/mix. That's match.com/mix. Match.com/mix.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here. Folks keep asking me how KFC can afford to fit two pieces of Kentucky Fried Chicken, taters and gravy, a biscuit, a medium drink, and a cookie into my KFC $5 fill-ups and still sell them for just $5. Well, I saved a little money by only paying for 25 seconds of this here 30-second commercial. KFC, it's finger-licking good. At participating KFCs for a limited time, prices may vary. Tax extra. Extra charge for breast piece and side item substitution may apply.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates, too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/mix for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/mix. That's match.com/mix. Match.com/mix.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here. Folks keep asking me how KFC can afford to fit two pieces of Kentucky Fried Chicken, taters and gravy, a biscuit, a medium drink, and a cookie into my KFC $5 fill-ups and still sell them for just $5. Well, I saved a little money by only paying for 25 seconds of this here 30-second commercial. KFC, it's finger-licking good. At participating KFCs for a limited time, prices may vary. Tax extra. Extra charge for breast piece and side item substitution may apply.
Welcome back to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Chris O'May. Our guests today are Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. And the topic, not on the table, but the topic in the glass, is water. Tom?
You know, the Bel Air Country Club, Dave Dino, mm-hmm. in the back nine, they have this creek. Mm-hmm. It's pumped water, but it's this great creek, and it goes into a lake. And they realized they had to do something about it, so they stopped it. Mm. Then they drilled wells. So now the creek is maintained from the well water that they're taking out of the ground, and it looks just as good as it used to look. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they wanted to do something, at least do their part here. They have a large amount of water that they were using, so let's see if we can do something to conserve that a little bit.
They found a different way to have the water. They didn't tap into the city's supply, your supply, right. My supply. They found an untapped supply right under their own land.
Desalinization?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, lay it on me.
Yeah, look, I think desalination is interesting. It's part of a portfolio. It's what we call augmentation, and you're taking new water and adding it to the grid. And so, to the extent that we can accomplish that in certain circumstances, it really does make sense. But it's not without its environmental and energy demands that will limit its potential application. It's also subject to the problem that desal it generates water on the coast, and water is very heavy to transport and to move. And so while it may solve problems in specific coastal areas, it's not going to be of great utility in solving water supply issues inland, because there's no way to effectively move the water in. And it gets back to the trading that I mentioned and being able to trade water from one user across the grid.
Chris?
Scott, we're talking about different water alternative sources. What about sources from, you know, abundance of water supply up in Alaska or Canada? Weren't there certain proposals in the past, pipelines, either underwater or over land?
It's always popular, and much to the chagrin of people in northern climates where they do have abundant water, that people in the arid West will even mention the notion that Arizona or Nevada or California is going to be coming to their back door and harvesting water. Canada itself has largely adopted protective measures to ensure that their nation's resources don't leave the country, and states have also considered and tried to take whatever proactive actions that they can to prevent that from happening. There's a Great Lakes Compact, ostensibly because there were a lot of people who were not only concerned about the draw on water within the Great Lakes region, but also the prospect that all of a sudden that water was going to find its way in a pipeline and going to Las Vegas. There is a story which had some validity of Nevada considering taking a pipeline to the Mississippi River and taking flood flows and bringing it across to the west. And it's those kind of proposals that often meet with local state objections, and I just think that we're not likely to see something like that.
Bob Bilcock, weigh in on this. Is he totally wrong?
No, I think he's bringing up a lot of good points. I think he's being very modest in describing, you know, what value he brings to this mix here in the Western United States and particularly in California. You know, I think it was Mark Twain that said, "Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting." And I'll tell you, since this drought started, we've got a situation where, the guns are loaded in the Central Valley of California right now. We've got a federal court decision that, working with the Endangered Species Act, has pretty much contributed to the stopping of all the water flowing from the Sacramento Delta into Southern California.
Wow.
You know, you've got the situation on the San Joaquin River. Yes, sir.
Let me pause for a second.
Sure.
What environmental act is, what has happened here to cause the water not to be able to come down here?
Well, there's a situation in the ecological system that is the Sacramento Delta is very complex. However, there is one little fish that, let me just tell you, the farmers would love to fry up, and that would be called the Delta smelt. And that little guy is it's the federal law, the Endangered Species Act, that basically says his habitat has to be maintained. And in order to maintain that habitat, the pumps have to go off. So while there might be sufficient water available to come through the Delta, it's pretty much right now 100% dedicated to maintaining that Endangered Species Act and maintaining that habitat for that fish. So the fish is right now problem all to its own.
Not all fish, just this particular.
Just this particular. Well, it's all fish, but this one's the one that has the federal judge sitting behind him.
Does it even taste good? I've never seen it on a menu.
You know, Tom, it's the funniest thing you ever want to see. They actually have a court order to actually go to the screens where the pumps are, pick the fish up, they put them in tankers, and they relocate them several, you know, like 25 miles upstream in the Delta and release them. And the bass and the predator fish all know the sound of the truck and literally just line up for lunch when they put them back in the Delta.
Wow.
So it's okay for the fish to eat the fish, but it's not okay to us to get the water because of the fish.
And not if you don't want to go to jail.
Will anything change that? I mean, the intimation here is that the water supply is getting so low that is causing an endangerment. If we had a lot of water in the Delta, would that order then change?
I think if there were, it's all timing. And I think that if there were more water in the Delta, yes, it would certainly be capable of managing that act.
Okay.
Scott, tell me this. What do you do for a living day in and day out? We heard your description a little bit here, but what do you do when you get to the office or the stream or the ocean or wherever you have to go?
Well, I'm really fortunate. I, on one hand, I'm a shareholder in the Brownstein firm, and so one of my assignments is I serve as the general counsel for the Chino Basin Water Master, which is a court-appointed special master whose duty is to manage groundwater resources within the Inland Empire. And it's a great responsibility. It's a great honor. Over the last 14 years, Bob has actually served on our board of directors, and we have really done some prolific things in terms of financing, designing projects which conserve water, store, transfer, treat water. It's been an amazing, amazing exercise. I think I mentioned the San Diego transaction, and for about 15 years, I've been the lead negotiator for the San Diego County Water Authority with regard to procuring Colorado River supplies. And then over the last 5 years, I became involved with the Cadiz Company, and I am now the CEO, and I'm extraordinarily proud of that project and the desire to conserve on an annual basis 50,000 acre-feet of water to bring it to urban Southern California to help in water supply reliability.
Chris?
Scott, I know we have, obviously, a lot of water issues here, and we have to conserve, as Californians, our water sources. But there's a recent topic that has come up that I think has a lot of Californians kind of wondering, and that's fracking. Because I know that hydraulic fracking can cause problems to existing water sources. How has that come up in your experience?
Well, obviously, the subject is getting a lot of attention. In the place where I live, which is Santa Barbara, California, mm-hmm. there's actually an effort right now to try to ban fracking within the county. And so there's a convergence, really, of energy and water policy. And the state is trying to balance the position between the energy needs and the water supply needs. I think from my standpoint, the next and most interesting area for that debate is going to be whether or not counties and local entities have any power to regulate fracking given the state's approach. And some would say hands off. And there's a doctrine which is largely known as home rule, where you'd say the county of San Bernardino would have an interest in regulating water resources within its boundaries. It would be more difficult for it to regulate fracking per se, right? Because fracking is the subject of a state energy policy. But the use of water to support that activity is clearly something that would customarily be within the police power of a local agency.
But how this works then, as I understand fracking, there's an enormous amount of water that's needed for this to take place. A well is put down 300 feet or so, makes a right turn 90 degrees, and goes for quite some great distance. And then when it hits the pocket of the fuel, then that comes through the pipe, and that's how it works, right?
Largely, yes. So the you inject the liquid for the purpose of freeing up the hydrocarbon and making it harvestable for commercial purposes. I think the primary issue from my perspective with regard to fracking is really the A, the consumptive use, right? How much water you're using, and then B, what do you do with it when you're done? And where the water is subject to deep injection, it really becomes completely consumptive. The water is lost from the system and is not subject to reuse again. And so for every acre foot that's taken, that's an actual deduction from the system, unlike traditional wastewater, which we use again and again and again. And then the second issue is really relates to how do you treat it, right? If you're not going to deep inject it, what are you going to do with it? Who's going to bear the cost of treatment, and where and how do you dispose of it? And I think those are the things that concern people most.
So when you use water for fracking, can you recover the water?
Oh, absolutely. You may. There are ways in which to recover the water along with the hydrocarbons. The question is what do you do with it when you get it? Right. And how do you treat it and dispose of it?
We're going to catch our breath at this point as you listen to Champions of Justice. Our special guests are Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. They are experts in the field of water. And it's a subject that is in front of us each and every day here in California. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Chris O'May. I'm Dave Dino. We'll be back with more in just a moment here at Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Gary Garrison. A crowd of 200,000 is marching on downtown Los Angeles for today's second annual Women's March LA. Meanwhile, One Life LA is also being held today. A youth and young adult rally is underway at this hour at Olvera Street, north of downtown Los Angeles. The march gets underway at noon. Governor Jerry Brown has reversed a state parole board's recommendation that former Charles Manson follower Leslie Van Houten be granted parole. And the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office has revealed that music legend Tom Petty died from an accidental drug overdose. KABC SoCal weather, high surf advisory in effect until 9 tonight. Partly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers this morning. Sunny this afternoon, highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. More news coming up and continuous coverage at KABC.com. I'm Gary Garrison, Talk Radio 790 KABC News.
Want to lower your mortgage rate and payments? Wake up to Carrie Kasem and Alex Michaels Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. as they bring you up-to-the-minute information and advice on mortgage rates and programs on the Get Mortgage Fit radio show, NMLS 6606, on 790 KABC.
They say, want a new wireless plan? Gotta buy a new phone. At Simple Mobile, we say, just bring your own phone. Then pop in a Simple Mobile SIM card and boom, you've got 30-day unlimited plans starting at just $25 with nationwide coverage on a lightning-fast 4G LTE network, all with no contract. You can keep it complicated, or you can mobile simple with Simple Mobile.
Available nationwide at Best Buy, Simple Mobile dealers, and authorized retailers. See the latest terms and conditions of service at simplemobile.com.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 2000 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 2000.
Norm's Bigger Better Breakfasts are back. All day, every day, starting from just $6.99. Two slices of crispy hot bacon. Two perfectly cooked farm fresh eggs. Two sizzling sausage links. Hot grilled ham. Golden hash browns. And two scratch-made buttermilk hotcakes. All this for just $6.99. Yep, Norm's Bigger Better Breakfasts are back. All day, every day, but only for a limited time. Norm's Restaurants, where life happens 24/7.
You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Chris O'May, and our guests today, Scott Slater and Robert Bocock, and we're talking about the subject of water. Bob, we're talking about the supply of water, but we are also all concerned with the safety of water. When supplies of water go down, does contamination go up?
You know, that's an interesting question. I will tell you, you know, based on my experience, the secret to pollution has a tendency to be dilution. So if the water supplies are voluminous, meaning there's a lot of water in a surface water body, the contaminant levels that you'll be able to detect go down. We're primarily concerned with contamination of groundwater, and it's the same thing. As the groundwater tables get depleted, when there's no surface water available, as is this the condition here in the state of California, and more people go off the surface water supplies and start turning on their groundwater supplies, as Tom was talking about the golf course using the groundwater there. What ends up happening is that volume begins to decrease, and if there are contaminants in the area, they will increase and migrate because the larger body of water has been depleted.
Dave Dino, you know, the Aaron Brockovich movie was really all about the contamination with chromium of the water.
Hinckley.
In Hinckley, exactly, because when the gas would come in on the El Paso line, it would be too hot to put into the generators. Mm. So they have a cooling tower. They run the pipe up the tower. They cascade water over the pipe, and that's how they cooled it. And then, indeed, that process would continue. The bad part is that the chromium would get involved with the water, and they would just more or less put it on the ground. It would go down to the water table. So the next thing you know, all these people in Hinckley, the only real source of water they had was the groundwater, and now it's contaminated with chromium, a terrible carcinogen. So that was really the issue that took place there. As Bob had predicted, he didn't think that it would ever be possible to clean up the chromium in that water up in Hinckley. Mm. And as lo and behold, even that movie was 8 years ago or something, that chromium-infested water continues to move towards the Colorado River. It's now a couple of acres away, I guess,
wow.
Huh, Bob, from the Colorado.
Right, out at the Topok facility. Yep.
What happens if that actually gets into the water supply in the Colorado River?
Well, once again, the issue on the Colorado River is that the volume is so great that it would be diluted out. But it's certainly a very, very serious concern, and the Colorado River agencies are monitoring that water quality.
Chris?
Scott, I'm just wondering how bad California compares to other states. How bad is it here, you know?
Well, look, I think we have those issues. You have to separate those issues which are climatic and temporal. And then you have to look at the issues which are law and policy and doctrinal. You know, one of the funny things about water law is that it establishes a social compact for who is to get water in times of shortage. And the only time that water rights typically matter is when there's shortage. The problems in California are not doctrinal. We have a very progressive legal system for how water is to be allocated. We're not a legal backwater, and with due respect to Texas, we've had safe field management in this state since 1949, which basically means you can take what nature puts back in on an annual basis, and then where you can improve on that subject to some innovation by man, you're encouraged to do that. So we have had that fabric for at least 50 years. Our issue has been in the affordability and the process difficulties in trying to impose that framework on a river-by-river or groundwater-by-groundwater basis. And I think what you're seeing right now, probably the number one headline following the drought, is the precipitous fall in the groundwater tables across California. And there is a big cry today for groundwater management. And I think Bob really set the foundation for that. In Southern California, the source of groundwater was always the first water supply we used. It was beneath our feet. We turned on our wells and we used that. And then when we overused that in the 40s and 50s, we brought in supplemental water to balance the books. The Central Valley was not that way. And the Central Valley surface water was always the cheapest source. And as the surface water has dried up, literally because of climate and regulatory restrictions, people have turned to groundwater, and they've done so in a massive way. And there has been a huge sucking sound across the Central Valley as these people have tried to cover the shortage.
We see some extremely large pipes that come down the mountainside north of Los Angeles. Those are sources of water for us, aren't they, normally?
Well, there are three basic pathways into urban California. One is the Colorado River Aqueduct. The second is the Owens Valley, Los Angeles Aqueduct. And then the third is the State Water Project. And as Bob mentioned, this year, the State Water Project allocation has been virtually zero. It is the lowest it's ever been. And for the Colorado River, California is no longer able to vacillate its use from year to year. Since 2003, she made a compromise with the federal government and the other Colorado River states to live within her apportionment of 4.4 million acre feet. Roughly 3 million acre feet of that is used by agriculture out in the Imperial and Coachella areas. So only what's left is available for urban Southern California. And then when it comes to the Owens situation, we delivered the least quantity of water in history from that source of supply. So when you evaluate our imported sources, they're way down.
You know what? Here's the story. I definitely understand different political views affecting various issues. For example, you know, should there be a limitation of damages in a medical malpractice case? Should this be the law or this be the law? It's hard to imagine, though, that people, Dave Dino, don't get their heads together with respect to, hey, man, we need some water, and what's the best way to do it? And, you know, I'm all in favor of fish and everything, but holy Toledo, you know, I'm much more in favor of making sure that people have a fresh water supply here in for this state of California. Mm-hmm. How come there's a differing view in this stuff?
Well, I think that at least for the better part of 100 years, the environment began to emerge as a need or a concern for water. The first part of California's water history was the development of large projects which would bring water to where it was needed from where it existed. And in the 70s, we began to understand the environmental consequence of those decisions. So the environmental movement came into being and began to reclaim water for the benefit of the environment. And what the environmental community always sought was an equal seat at the table so that their needs and uses would be considered. What's happened is with the emergence and the application of the United States-based Endangered Species Act, there's no longer a discussion of sharing per se, but the specific environmental demands are always balanced in favor of protection of the species. So it isn't a sharing discussion so much as it is the need to protect that specific species first, and then the remaining consumptive users fight over the spoils.
Hey, how about the species being the human species that we better do something about protecting?
Well, I think there are quite a few farmers in the Central Valley today that would share that point of view. And it's not just the farmers. It's the local economies and the people who are going without jobs as a result of the lack of water and the lack of opportunity that would chime in.
You know, we see these news items all the time that the farmers can no longer grow the stuff and they can't feed the cattle, and they used to have 2,000 pieces of cattle, and now they got four, and all that stuff, all devoted to the fact of lack of water supply. Huh?
Look, I think it is as catastrophic a condition that I have ever seen in my 30 years. And as I explained it a couple of days ago, what you have is the convergence of a couple of things. Yes, you have reduced rainfall. Yes, there is an acknowledgement now, regardless of whether you believe in its cause, that there is climate change occurring. It is occurring, and there are changes in precipitation patterns. When you add to that the existence of the shortage, you add to that new lands coming into production. New lands, which were fallow historically, are now shouldering crops of some kind. And there has been a transition on a large-scale basis from things which are row crops to permanent crops like trees, almond trees. And those investments, whether it's houses or orchards, find it difficult to weather periods of shortage. And so, for example, that plays out in a year like this year, where in one or more districts, you're seeing 10, 15 or more percent of their planted permanent crop acreage going without water. That economic loss is devastating.
It's in the billions, and something that, you know, we were talking about all this fighting that's going on. This year is absolutely, I mean, off the charts as far as litigation and lawsuits. You know, the gloves are off, I'll tell you that right now. The San Joaquin River, in my entire lifetime, has never had water in it in May. Last Thursday, the San Joaquin River from Millerton Reservoir there in Fresno was turned on. You can whitewater raft down the Millerton Reservoir at the height of our drought based on a decision that's now pending before the federal court. Everybody up there is fighting. Mm. Where Scott really makes his money and his contribution to society is in putting all the people in the same room. I'll tell you, as a water master working with him for the last, you know, 20 years, he has his little pajama parties where literally the mayors and the water board directors from around the country get locked in a room until they come out with a settlement. And you guys think your settlement conferences are rough? You go to one of Scott's parties, and it's a real. I think I spent 10 days there once.
You know, Scott, that's really great, and there aren't too many guys like you running around out there. That's for sure. You like your job, huh?
No, look, I think water matters for all the reasons that we're discussing now. There couldn't be anything more important, and it's so important that you have to believe that you would rather design your own solutions and rely on your own ingenuity to solve problems than have someone dictate them to you.
And we're going to pause one last time as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Chris O'May. Our guests today are experts in the field of water, Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. We'll be back with more in just a moment as you listen to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
When you join the Fuel Rewards program at Shell and get instant gold status, you'll save on every fill, every day.
But you'll feel like you just won a dance-off competition that saved the world.
That's what it feels like to have gold status with the Fuel Rewards program at Shell. With gold status, you'll save 5 cents with every gallon from the first fill. Download the Fuel Rewards app, join, and start saving today. Restrictions apply. Active gold status required. Introductory offer valid for 6 months after activation. Limit 20 gallons at participating Shell stations. See fuelrewards.com/gold for full details.
They say, want a new wireless plan? Gotta buy a new phone. At Simple Mobile, we say, just bring your own phone. Then pop in a Simple Mobile SIM card and boom, you've got 30-day unlimited plans starting at just $25 with nationwide coverage on a lightning-fast 4G LTE network, all with no contract. You can keep it complicated, or you can mobile simple with Simple Mobile.
Available nationwide at Best Buy, Simple Mobile dealers, and authorized retailers. See the latest terms and conditions of service at simplemobile.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
Guys, this may be the last time you ever have to think about hair loss. Because I'm telling you, Bosley is the real deal. They're giving men their hair back permanently. Their real hair. All it takes to get started on the hair gain train is a single text message. You'll get an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card when you text FUN to 85850. Check them out now. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Dude, this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're America's number one hair restoration expert, ahead of the curve with the latest technology. And the best part, Bosley's solution is permanent. You're going to love what they'll do for your hair. So drop what you're doing long enough to send a text. Get your free information kit and gift card for $250 off by texting FUN to 85850. Don't forget, that's FUN. To 85850.
We're back with our final portion of today's Champions of Justice. We're talking about the subject of water. It's not necessarily a subject that would grab our attention right out of the chute, but it is one that now affects each and every one of our lives, and the insights we're getting today are giving us not only information, but perhaps some hope as we look ahead as well. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Chris O'May, and our guests are Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. Chris?
Bob, maybe you can break down for the benefit of the listeners how water is regulated in California, and also, if there's, say, a polluter out there doing bad things, how can the Water Board or any other governmental agency protect Californians?
Well, the short answer to that question is California is divided up into nine regions. And the nine regions have locally appointed boards representing various classes of government. There's usually somebody from the environmental community, the city government, county government, legal industry on the regional boards. I think, you know, in recent years they've gone away from those categories, but those are the local boards of jurisdiction. Here in Los Angeles County, it's the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. They all report to a board appointed by Governor Brown called the State Water Resources Control Board, whose chair is presently Felicia Marcus. Incredible woman, really can get her job done. But they're responsible not only for the quantity of water, they're the ones that are overseeing the reduction and overseeing the drought right now, but they're responsible for prosecuting polluters on the very local level. The case that's pending right now in Carson, California, where the groundwater there has been impacted by the contamination. The people whose homes are above the groundwater have the oil literally floating up in the cracks of their foundations. That goes to the regional board. If there's ever an appeal process from that regional board, then you go to the state board. You have to exhaust those administrative remedies first before you can then take legal action. But that's, and they all run hand in glove. So there's actually five people in the state of California that are responsible for the quality and the quantity of our water.
And the bad part is those people are living on top of this contaminated area. I think the company that actually owned it as a tank farm put out little signs not too long ago of don't let your children dig in the backyard. Mm. You know, I mean, that's the only reason you ever buy a backyard is so your kids can go dig in the back of it.
Yes.
Perhaps, Tom and Robert, an update from the two of you. You were involved in the issue of BP's oil spill in the Gulf. And it's been a few years since that's sort of been in the news. What's happened?
Still thinks.
I mean, what's happened to the water there?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, and as much as we're suffering the effects of global warming and climate change, I think that the positive piece of information out there is Mother Nature's been very kind. Since the oil spill, there has not been a hurricane in the Gulf that will, as I've predicted, as soon as that happens, we'll stir that all back up again and we'll have a different kind of mess on our hands. Mm. But as far as from a legal perspective, there's an administrator. And they have a very clean process of paying out those claims, and things are moving forward, you know, quite well.
Are you saying that there's still a lot of oil, but just down on the seabed?
It's down. It's not actually. It's floating below the bottom, and it's basically thermally trapped, meaning that the cold water and the warm water have it in sort of a concealed little bubble down there. And as soon as there's some sort of a weather event, I think it may resurface. My money's on yes.
And then I think everybody agrees there is global warming now, huh? Okay, Scott.
Well, ask a hot question, Tom.
Look, I think it's impossible to deny. I think there are going to be people who argue the causes, but I think it's now accepted that there is global warming.
And the causes, that could be up in the air, but there's no question the result is something that we can see and hear and taste and so forth.
I think that's absolutely true. Now, you might be able to dig up somebody from somewhere who would have an outlying view, but I think those are more and more being considered to be outliers.
Now, okay, we've had enough of the problem here, boys. What's the solution? Okay, Scott, this is why they pay you the big bucks.
So well, again, I think it's a portfolio. Yes, I think we need to conserve. I absolutely think we need to conserve. But that's given our track record and successes that we've already had in that regard, it's, in my opinion, not the area of the greatest opportunity. Conservation is important. I think we need markets to be able to move water and to take it from areas of surplus to those that are in shorter supply. I think we need to improve our transportation to allow that to happen because we only have a few pipelines that can move water around, transboundary pipelines, if you will. And I think that we need to have the ability to trade water off of a grid. It seems to me that there's no good reason why we can't access public and private capital to make investments in conservation that other people can't afford. For example, if I wanted to be a home builder in the Inland Empire, call it Riverside, and I wanted to generate water for my project, I ought to be encouraged, incentivized to go into the inner cities in Los Angeles County, make improvements in conservation, and then to capture those savings on the other side of a grid. I think something like that is important and helpful. And I think we're going to need to make some decisions about what our plans are for water augmentation. We need storage. Are we going to do surface storage? It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it's possible for us to complete surface storage. But we do have opportunities for groundwater storage, and we can store vast quantities of water beneath the earth in a way that we do not suffer evaporative losses, and the storage is there and waiting for us. So I think those combinations, along with some innovation, are really going to assist us.
And I suppose we're okay the next week or two, but I suppose you're trying to look 10 years from now, huh?
Yeah, I'll point to the largest planning effort that's on the books right now. It's called the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, the BDCP. They are proposing, the governor's plan is that we would construct two twin tunnels, largely to secure the existing quantities of delivery from north to south and to satisfy the needs of the prolific state water project. But when you examine the study, what you will see is that is completely a water supply reliability project to protect existing supply. It has no bearing on being able to meet additional demands as they emerge over time. And here's my point. The BDCP, regardless of your view on that project and its wisdom, and it's hotly contested across the state, it alone is not going to solve the water augmentation problem. We still need local projects. We still need water recycling. We still need other forms of augmentation and innovation to solve the problem.
Who's against it?
I think the state is largely split, north versus south, on the wisdom of BDCP. I think the Northern California areas, and particularly the Bay Area, are strongly opposed, although you will see some opposition in Southern California, largely for fiscal reasons. And you'll see most of the Central Valley coming out in support of elements of it.
Chris?
Why are they opposed?
There's the notion that the environmental consequences associated with the transportation of water are too damaging. But in my own opinion, I think beneath some significant portion of the environmental opposition is the idea of water to Southern California means more growth, and that by providing water, there'll be houses and it'll support an economic boom in Southern California. And it's sort of disassociated from the reality that people are having babies every day and they choose to live here. California's population is not going down anytime soon. And if we don't make plans to provide for these people when they're here, we're going to rue the day that we didn't.
You know, other nations are having problems too, aren't they? China talks about its, have all these people and its water problems as well. So it seems to me you two guys ought to get out of here and go back to the office and figure out some plans to solve this problem. Bob Bocock, say a couple of words here.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Tom. It's always great to come in and talk to you about water. And it's certainly an honor to be able to bring a colleague of 25-plus years in to talk with you and get his perspective on things.
Scott, you're really impressive. I really mean that. You have you found an area that needs people like you. I don't think there are a lot of people like you running around out there. And it's really nice of you to come down and spend a few minutes with us to educate us just a little tiny bit of the problems out there and what we got to do about it.
Well, look, it was great fun. Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure and an honor to be here. And obviously, I'm passionate about the future of California, and I want other people to understand that our future is dependent on having a reliable water supply.
Can we say for the two of you that you are optimistic as you look forward when we talk about the issue of water and water supply?
Well, Dave, I certainly am. I think that there's a lot of really smart people looking at this. We fight all the time, but at the end of the day, we come together, and I think we're going to get it done. And with guys like Scott keeping us in line and keeping us on the straight and narrow, we'll be there.
Look, I've seen a lot of the world, and one of the things that makes America great is our ability to learn from our mistakes, keep trying, and pursue things innovatively. And I think in the end, we'll figure it out.
You have been listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Chris O'May, and our guests today, Scott Slater and Robert Bocock. Our producer is Naylin Belyayev. I'm Dave Dino. A final thought. It's interesting. It comes from Nolan Bushnell. Everyone who's ever taken a shower has an idea. It's the person who gets out of the shower, dries off, and does something about it who makes a difference. Here are two guys who get out of the shower, and they make a difference about what just went into the shower. As such, they are champions of justice. Thank you for joining us.
This show furnished by Girardi Keys.